another edition of Warrior Connection. Well, we got another rainy day here in Illinois. It's been chilly for the last few days, and it just seems to keep raining and raining and raining. Well, we're on another Memorial Day, and even though Memorial Day is actually on May 30th, they're celebrating it this weekend with all different events. I mean, you've got car races all over the place. You have events to memorialize everybody at all the cemeteries and various events all across our nation. Well, as we look at this, and as I've heard over and over again, people come up and say, hey, well, you were in the military. Oh, thanks for your service. Well, there's a lot more to it than just thanking somebody for their service. We have an incredible number of military personnel going back from World War II, obviously all the Vietnam, Desert Storm, Operation Iraqi Freedom, Enduring Freedom, and all these other things that are in severe need of medical care. Not only do we need to take care of their physiological health, we need to take care of their psychological health. And often those domains totally come together as one. Well, as we look at this stuff, one of the things that's affecting everybody is PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, shell shock, combat stress, whatever the name is coming. Well, let's tie it all together tonight. And to help us understand this, I've invited Phyllis Morris back on the show tonight. Good evening, Phyllis.
Good evening, Doug. How are you doing?
Well, maybe it'll stop raining, huh?
Yeah, really. I don't know. There seems to be going a lot of that going around these days.
Yeah, just a little bit of mud out here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, and I, you know, you're an accomplished author and everything. You were raised in the military. Your dad was leader of the Air Force Band at Chanute Air Force Base many, many years ago.
Yep.
So you got to learn all about the military domain and how it affects the family, how it affects the children, you know, and everything coming around on that.
Yeah.
But then where PTSD comes in is in the military. We go through combat situations.
Mm-hmm.
But you went through the worst of the worst in a catastrophe, didn't you?
Yes, I went through many things in my life that's triggered the post-traumatic stress disorder. It disrupted my life and my daily activities. I became agoraphobic, wouldn't leave the house for 4 years. I had a severe car accident, which disabled me for many years, and I gained a whole lot of weight being laid up in a wheelchair. And then I was in an airplane crash and actually a fire in San Francisco at a hotel. I'm on the 44th floor, and the 43rd floor was on fire. It was a insurance convention each time. I can no longer fly. So things trigger the PTSD really bad, like Hurricane Katrina did, Hurricane Isaac that just happened, because my family still lives there. Being in the military, getting back to that, what triggered mine was that every time we would move, aside from what I told you before about my friends, our toys and all of our stuff would get lost. And we were, that's the only thing we had from America that we could have with us. And that was very traumatic for a little child. You know, her baby towels and everything to be gone.
You were traveling throughout the United States and also into Asia with your dad, when your family.
Mm-hmm.
So as you traveled all the years while you were growing up, each time you had to move,
yeah,
you had a whole different circumstances that you had to put up with. At the same time, those little mementos that gave you that concrete foundation were disappearing, huh?
Yes. Like, for example, when we left Japan, we stopped in Lackland Air Force Base and stayed there for about almost a year. I made very good friends with a lot of cheerleaders, who later on is why I became a cheerleader. And they, I had to be uprooted from them right before school started. So once again, I had to say goodbye. And it wasn't fun. But I went to New Orleans and lived there, went through 45 hurricanes. I was a major at the Mardi Gras parades, and as you know, I was Miss Air Force Recruiter, 68, and went in the guerrilla parade in Gretna. I just recently found the doubloons that I used to throw from the parade that says, you know, Air Force 1968 recruiting. But it was just all the trauma of the moving and the trying to settle in and getting with new schools. That was so hard, you know. Walking into America was very scary, because in Japan, they were very behind American children emotionally. So here I am, 13 years old, going into school and being really not ready. I had met my girlfriend next door named Sandy, And I went up to her one day and said, can you come out and play? And she was in high school. She said, I don't play. And she shut the door. It's like, well, everybody in Japan plays. So it was a hard adjustment for that, you know. I just didn't know how to handle anything. But it stays with me for the rest of my life. And there's a lot of other events that's caused this.
Yeah, it always does. So when we look at some of the events, and I'm looking at the post-traumatic stress guide, it's mm-hmm. called the Quick Series.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously we've lived this, and I live this every day, as you and I have discussed and all the rest of us discussed.
Yeah.
Some of the things in the events that trigger all this thing, we'll just go right through the list here. Obviously combat operations.
I don't have that, but yeah.
Yeah, but you sure lived through the disasters.
Well, there is a gentleman that I don't know if you heard of this, but there is a walk called Carry the Load. It's a 27-day, 2,000-mile walk, and they've already earned $1 million. They walk from New York to Texas. It's for a gentleman that it's Memorial Day, and I think they're walking right now, as a matter of fact. What happened is that this young man with two children committed suicide, and his family have started this up, and this is what they're doing now. And people are just dying for our freedom, you know, and just trying to get back into everyday living, and he just couldn't cope, I guess. And I'm pretty confident that PTSD had a big effect on him.
Yeah. So when we look through this list, let's go through this list. We've got combat operations. We got disasters.
Yes.
So you've been through multiple disasters, as all of us have.
Yes.
Life-threatening accidents. You've been through those. And
yes.
I mean, one of the first things ever happened, I'll never forget this, because we were coming through Wisconsin, coming back from annual training with the Illinois Army National Guard,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden the state police pulled my ambulance out of the line for a massive accident.
Mm.
And there was a three-car T-bone accident and just casualties all over the place. And
oh, God.
Myself and Lieutenant had to treat all the stuff. So, I mean, we lost people and we saved people. But the life-threatening accident that we came across that we were pulled out of, you know, just going down the road because we were the only medical team around.
Yeah.
And that had happened to me once before, too, when we were coming back from fishing up in northern Wisconsin. So witnessing violent death or mutilation of others, I mean violent death in combat operations or a car accident or a plane accident or a train accident, obviously torture, and torture comes into both plays. You can have torture in the military,
mm-hmm.
but you can also have child and spouse abuse and torture throughout that, can't we?
Mm-hmm.
Sexual assault, that's all in the news right now. We've had already done a show on that in the previous time. You can go back to the archives and look at that. We need to get those people back on. Violent crime, something we have to be concerned all the time, threat of serious injury or death.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, you're seeing all this stuff.
Again, when you have post-traumatic stress disorder and you get, it brings on panic attacks, you know, you have that fight or flight, and you really feel like you're dying. You can't breathe, your hands are clammy, your heart starts racing. My heart got up to 180 beats a minute when it happens. I would be in the grocery store, I'd have to leave the cart and just run to the car. And by the time I got to the car, it was over. But I was so drained that I had to go home and sleep for hours.
Yeah, I mean, we got all this stuff that, you know, mm-hmm. again, contributing factors.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you just mentioned this, more exposures to recent or horrific events.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, right now for me, I mean, this is a difficult time. I mean, I came back from Vietnam for the second time
mm-hmm.
in the end of May, beginning of June of 1971. And then I came back from Desert Storm, obviously, you know, end of May, beginning, well, end of June of 1991, 20 years to the effect.
Mm-hmm.
And then the level of involvement in all this stuff, that what happened, you know, some people, everybody's got a different level of involvement, and everybody can be in the same location, the same event at the same time.
Yep.
And what you're going to experience and what you're going to see is completely different.
Yes.
I mean, that's one of the hardest things to do, so your involvement in all this stuff gets to be bad news.
Well, it's true. It's so true. And I can't even, I have to be in control of a car. I can't drive with somebody driving. And I used to wonder why people would stop when there's not a stop sign, when I had the stop sign. And after it happened to me, when the person ran the stop sign, I do that now. So people say, why are you stopping? You don't have a stop sign. Well, because you don't know if they're going to run it, you know.
Yeah.
So that's a thing that triggers the PTSD, and I have to stay there and stop shaking for a few minutes. And, you know, it's just really terrible. But just like you can have, I don't know, just anything can trigger it. You know, but I isolate myself when it happens. I can't sleep. I haven't slept for the last 3 years through the night. I still don't, ever since my kids and my granddaughter, my grandkids moved it back to New Orleans. And then they had Hurricane Isaac. Now they had the tornadoes. I'm over here 1,000 miles away, helpless. And I just go into that mode. It's been very hard for me. Ever since the answering service, I've been kind of pulled away from people. Yeah.
So this is the current stressors of which you've just been describing.
Yeah. It's every day.
And it happens with, as when I'm going to make this clear, and this is why I've invited Phyllis on. I mean, we click together. We're just all clicking on the same wavelength here, which is totally unusual. Maybe because we're the same age, and both our dads were U.S. World War II Navy veterans. Could be, I don't know. We're both a schnook.
Absolutely.
Some of the things that happen there. The individual personality. Individual personalities are all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some of the recent things I had discussions with other members of our team, other people I've been in the military lately with, we've got a similar personality, and sometimes we've got distinctly opposite personalities.
Mm-hmm.
But then the individuals that we encounter in our daily life that are mean to us or whatever,
mm-hmm.
their personality also has a horrible effect related to the stress and how this all interacts and what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, the level of anxiety goes up and down, again, up and down, up and down, all over the thing. The history of severe traumatic events. How many times have you been through? How many times have you seen? Well, when we look, all of us, I mean, I went back and forth out of Vietnam, and then we did Desert Storm and back on a whole bunch of other different stuff and back on the DU project.
Mm-hmm.
You were traveling all over the country, all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Things continuously changing, and then you had all these different accidents that you were involved in.
Right, but the bad thing is that the car accident had two little babies in it. One was 2 years old, one was three. And I was going to bring my girlfriend's little boy with me, and he would have been in the front seat. But back then, they had no seat belts, so I would always travel with pillows. But he, at the last minute, I said, no, I don't think that he should come. And it's a good thing he didn't, because after the accident, they said he would have died for sure. The two in the back, one had a cracked skull, my little niece and my daughter, I think probably started getting post-traumatic stress disorder or panic attacks and never realized it at that time, because later in life, when I got divorced and I left my husband and I started getting sick for those 4 years where I didn't leave the house, she still suffers from panic attacks. And I blame myself.
Well, that leads exactly into the next thing, is intense feelings of guilt.
I mean, and
you
just really
described that, you described that perfectly, but the same thing happens with the military.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes all the way back to, you know, when I was in Vietnam and all the different things in Desert Storm. I hear this all the time from the current guys. I say, well, I lived, or this happened to me, or I did this and this event happened, or because I did this was a consequence. And one thing that's hard for all of us to realize is we don't control fate. We don't control those things. We are not in control. Those things happen no matter what we want or what we want to do or how we want to do things. We can put all of our efforts into it, but that doesn't mean it's not going to happen.
I went into therapy and care treatment for years because I got mad at my father. And I told him, why don't you drop dead? I didn't mean it. And the next day he did. And I couldn't take it back.
Yeah, and there was no relationship at all.
Well, I loved him, but we weren't that close.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, the reality is what happened in you know, your feelings or what you thought had nothing to do with the reality of what happened to him, though.
Well, what they made me do at the hospital was I had to leave, go to his gravesite, and apologize and tell him I didn't mean it. And it did help, you know, that I dealt with that. And I had a lot of guilt because I couldn't take it back, and it was just terrible.
Well, but, you know, one of my favorite movies, again, you know, is a baseball movie, and where the young man and his dad were, you know, wanted to play baseball in this, obviously, field of dreams. In the whole thing, and that whole movie surrounds that, where he had said something to his father.
Really?
And that he couldn't take it back because his father died. And then, obviously, in the field of dreams, they all came back as angels to make everything well.
Yeah. Well, my father and I never fought. I never had words with him. I would never disrespect my father like that. Being military, no. You know, I might have thought it. I might have had fights with my mother verbally, but never with my dad. It was always, Daddy knows right, you know, and then... That was the last thing I ever said to him. And, oh, God, it was awful. And it was because of the fact that he was mad at me for leaving my husband in marriage. And I just didn't know. I think that the post-traumatic stress from the car accident and being in the wheelchair on and off and being in traction and sciatic pain, and all that pain led me to leave my husband because of my weight gain. I wasn't no longer skinny Phyllis. So I ran away.
And we hear about that all the time, don't we, with the military? You've seen this. You've experienced it. I've seen this. You know, I've encountered this forever and ever and ever. So, I mean, you've got all of these things that are happening, these incredible contributing factors that just bring everything together.
I still can't tell my family and everybody all the aspects of my treatment and all the aspects of why this happened or that happened, because it's my life, and it's, they can't understand. I don't know if they can understand it, but I just really don't want to delve into it with them. But seeing my daughter have migraines and seeing her have panic attacks, I know it's my fault, and that really tears me up.
You know, so we got to get into things. And obviously, when we start talking about all of this, and this one thing that we're continuously trying and I'm working on, and everybody else that knows, how do we reduce the overall chances of this happening and everything? Well, obviously, you know, for the military, pre-deployment stress education, I mean, you were deployed as a family over and over and over again.
Yes.
And there was really nothing in preparation for the deployment, just like in the military. Yep, okay, we're going to go. I mean, I've gone halfway around the world on 24 hours' notice. In other words, I'll get a phone call, and, hey, my bag, my B4 bag was packed, and I was gone. You know, well, so there's no real, I mean, you can be prepared, but you're not really prepared.
No, you don't have a choice when your mother and father say, come on, we're going again. But my mother had porphyria, acute porphyria, before she died. And she was always sick. So I had the fear of, I had to be the oldest. I had to take care of the kids. And when Mama wasn't working, she was sick. And now I've done that to my daughter. And I never, never, never wanted her to have that fear of not knowing if your mother's going to die.
You know,
and, but she lived through it again, Doug. And it's like, how did I let that happen?
You know, there's one thing, another thing, too, and they talk about here, overall chances of developing belief in one's mission. In other words, what is your job? What is your role? What is your mission? I know when I was a young puppy and I went over to Vietnam for the first time, I was only 19 years old, and we'd bought off into everything we were doing. And we got over there and we started doing the whole shebang. And then we kept back in. I came back in the Garden Reserve, and obviously with Desert Storm, we bought off and all that stuff. But then the thing that struck and struck me hard over all the years, and again, this is effects on the PTSD, is that belief in one's mission based on what you were told, and then you find out, hey, it ain't quite that way. The world isn't like they want us to believe. The world isn't there. The mission we're on isn't quite right, the same thing. It's sort of like, you know, with the Vietnam War, and that whole thing was built up in the Vietnam War, and the justification and everything was a Gulf of Tonkin incident.
I can't even imagine.
Well, we know today that incident never happened, and that was McNamara and Johnson's, you know, figment of their imagination in order to get everything going. And so we did all this stuff. And again, in the belief in the mission, this is one of those things that I struggle with, and after the realization that I didn't have anything to do with it, is all of the bombing missions we were involved in, either that I was on flying myself or I was supporting and maintaining the equipment, the sheer number of deaths we were responsible for. So again, we're believing in the mission and what was going on. And so again, that disrupts everything. Now, as a child of the military, and your dad's being shipped all over, your whole family had to believe in that mission, or you would never be shipped or going from location to location, right?
Right. Japan was an experience so that I'd never take back as far as the culture. I would never stay on the Air Force Base. I would go beyond the barbed wire fence, and I would live with the Japanese people in their huts. It was a wonderful thing and made lots of friends, but then once again I had to leave. But I wanted to tell you something, but it escapes me right now about being in Japan. It was so far from home, and it was just so far away from what I knew, you know, the culture. I didn't know the language, and that alone is really, you know, you're living on a base, and you have the mixed people. You have German people that can't speak Japanese. You have English people who can't speak German. You have some that can't speak English, and yet we all seem to be really good friends just saying a few words. And it really amazed me how the cultures came together like that. But we were all stressed. We would sit and talk about it. The girls would sit down and say, you know, I can't Christmas if we don't have our family. We don't have big family Christmases, and we just don't have anything, you know, to build our memories on except each other and the family that we have there. My father was always gone with the military. My mother was always working, and if she wasn't there, she was in the hospital sick. And being the oldest, I had a lot of stress from that, but a lot of gratification because all my siblings turned out wonderful.
You know, when we talk about this and disasters in Thailand and Japan, many, many years ago, I had a military assignment, military duty. I was part of Yamasakura. Mm-hmm. And so we went over to northern Japan, and we were at Sendai, and I was actually working in the hospital at Sendai in that whole area. And as you know, that is the area that was obliterated by the tidal wave and the nuclear disaster here a few years ago. So I'm sitting here.
Yeah, I reacted to that, too. Yeah.
That was, I mean, it was horrible because, see, I'm sitting there watching areas where I had worked on, you know, and I knew people there. You knew them because you saw them. Didn't mean that you knew them, but you knew who was in the area.
I recognized some of the areas.
And then have the whole thing obliterated in front of your face and on the news over and over and over again. I mean, for me, it was just like, what is happening here?
That's why, that's like every year they celebrate the Katrina, and every year they rehash it on television. And it's really scary because Isaac hit and then Sandy hit, and then the tornadoes just hit down in Louisiana. My daughter called me and said, Mama, Metairie's being obliterated by tornadoes and Kenner, and it's like, I'm over here. So here I go into this panic mode again, right? And so it's just you have to relive this, and to believe it or not, but August, I'm going to be arriving right before the date of the Hurricane Katrina by train to New Orleans. And you don't think I haven't been stressing over that? I haven't left my room for 2 days.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, when we lit here from Rantoul, obviously the train that comes down from Chicago through Rantoul on down to New Orleans is the famed city in New Orleans.
Right. Well, what I do is I don't leave from Rantoul because I found out that if I left from Rantoul, it would be a four-hour layover in Champaign, and then I'd have to switch trains in another part of Illinois. If I just spend the 20 minutes to get to Champaign, get on the train at 10:30, it goes straight through to New Orleans. Yes, they have the New Orleans Express. As a matter of fact, a friend of ours that we used to bowl with in New Orleans, she used to be a chef on the train. But, you know, what really fascinates me is I have vertigo, you know, and it comes from the thing, too. But when movement happens, but when I get on the train, it's like somebody gave me a tranquilizer. I'm totally, totally calm. There isn't anything that's stressing me out. I could live on a train. I don't know why until I researched it last night in my mind. When I was a little girl, and we lived here in Rantoul, at Mitchell Court, my mother had to send me to my aunt in Minnesota. And I had to be on the train by myself sometimes as a little bitty girl and come back and forth to Rantoul, Minnesota. And it was my comfort zone because I didn't fear it. And it's the only mode of transportation that really doesn't put me in that, you know, that panic thing.
Yeah, I'm on the same thing when I'm not so much on a train because I've only been on a train a few times. But obviously in an airplane, for me, I can get on an airplane and I just go right to sleep.
Ooh, not me.
And I was so used to flying combat missions on B-52s and KC-135s where, hey, you got your job done, you go up and you went to sleep and you woke up and you did your job and you went back to sleep and you woke up and did your job. You know,
when you're in an airplane and all of a sudden you hear one engine stop, then the other engine stops, and you're told to hold on to your buns. And you see me being by the window, you see the wing touch the tip of a mountain, and you're going down, and you know you're going down, and you're flying all over the sky, and everybody was very quiet. They were looking at the pictures of their children. They were praying, a lot of mumbling, but not any screaming. And then all of a sudden you come down, and my ex-husband was in the front of the plane, and all of a sudden, this was an insurance convention, so we all were in the same plane, you know, always on trips together. And I look over, and he kept telling me with every little fall, oh, that's normal, it's turbulence, that's normal, it's turbulence. Well, when the fire was lapping at my window, and I looked down and said, Ron, the flames are at my face here. He goes, what, I mean, Jerry? He said, that's not normal.
You know, I was many years ago, when we were flying out Utapau Air Force Base, Thailand, I was in the Air Force as Bob Knapp RDAP, and I was flying as an IP, and we were doing a terrain avoidance mission. In other words, certifying the crew on a terrain avoidance mission. Brand new crew just came over there to start flying. And so we're flying around it, 600 and some odd miles an hour, right down a mountain, down through a mountain valley towards the mountain. And the radar navigator had reset the cursor wrong, okay?
Oh, no.
And we're flying right at the mountain, and so the, downstairs, the instructor navigator, I'm up in the IP seat, and he's yelling, "We got to pull up, we got to pull up," and, you know, we're yelling to pull up, and I finally took my helmet off, and I bashed the pilot upside the head and grabbed the column. I got a great scar, and a nice, great, long, you know, dent in my flight helmet that I still have to this day.
You had the helmet on,
We missed that mountain at 600 and some miles an hour in a B-52 by about 75 or 100
you
feet.
You still fly?
Me? Oh, sure.
Oh, God, not me. No, 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 no. The only way I'll fly is if I wind up on a talk show in New York or Hollywood and I have to go. Or if Richard Simmons says, come see me, because he's my friend of 40 years. And then maybe I might. But he, as a matter of fact, when my mother died, he did a cruise to Luz in Alaska, because that's the only state I've never been in. And he said, he said it's for my birthday, and it was April 24th was the day it was leaving. The day of my birthday. I do have the video that is that they sent me of the party, but it wasn't didn't include me. I wasn't there. But you can't put me in a cruise. I said, look, I was in land, air, you know, and in a hotel fire. I'm not going on water. I said, because I've become your flotation device, Richard. You're so little. And I said, I'm not going. So I didn't go.
You know, when this all comes together, each one of our individual personalities and how we respond to all of these events are substantially different, and our personality changes with each event, and it changes from time to time. And so how you're going to respond is going to, I mean, just vary dramatically. One thing, again, from being in emergency medicine and working with so many of the guys on emergency rescue and medicine, and we are, as you've already learned about our team, we're kind of like the super garbage men for the military, you know, kind of like.
You're wonderful, Doug.
You know, we're kind of like, you know, this whole group of us, you know, is kind of like, where did these guys come from and how do they do it and why do they keep doing it again and how can they ever get into these events and stay calm? But I think that was probably one of the reasons why we got selected. It. Now, again, you and I both had a very extreme personal friend, Major General Frank Elliott. That had an incredible impact on all our lives. You know, I look at him as my angel, my general angel up in heaven. But he had selected us once, and I know you guys went through him all the same thing as knowing him, that he selected individuals to work with him and work around and do these things that had the capability.
Well, that he trusted, right.
Yeah, trusted or come together under a severe situation to get the job done. And that doesn't mean after the job's not done that it doesn't come unglued.
No, it never, things like that just don't, they just don't stop just because someone else isn't with us.
Yeah.
It's in the spirit, it's just in your soul.
Yeah, and that, I think that within the spirit and the soul is the whole key to come on this again, because that, you know, the ability to, you know, envision, and I'm reading this off of the card here, ability to envision the possibility of a greater good or the positive mental attitude. And that mental attitude is both affected physiologically and psychologically, though, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, absolutely.
I mean, both of us have spinal and neuromuscular problems. You and I both know that.
Oh, look, I had a broken back, broken ribs, and broken pelvic from the car wreck. And I know that PTSD, it causes me to have pain in my neck, and it causes pain in my lower back. And it's I have to fight it every day. Now I have really bad knee pain. I have to get knee replacements. And I get moments to where I just say, what's the whole use? But what scares me the most, Doug, and this is what happened. When I hit 63, I had an episode. Because I don't know why 63 was the trigger. My mother died instantly, like I said, at 69. My father dropped dead after leaving the hospital, going by my mom's work, at 66. So I wonder, they weren't heavy, and I am, so what's my outcome here?
You know,
like,
I mean,
how many more years do I have? Is this the moment? So with each pain I have, it's like instead of getting migraines, like some people in my family get them, I get the stomach trouble. I suffer from from IBS too. So it's like everything's just a trigger in my system.
And well, you sound like a combat veteran that got zapped over in Iraq and Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and Afghanistan.
I feel like I have. My whole life has been zapped. But yet, let me tell you this: I've had wonderful family, wonderful, wonderful memories. We became very close because we're all we had, all four of us siblings. And I have a half sibling too in Florida, which I met when I was 26. But it's, I searched for her, I found her. But it's just that I really don't regret anything in my life because I have a beautiful daughter, wonderful grandchildren, just absolute, they're top athletes in Louisiana, just came in third in track. You know, in high jump, my grandson did. The other one won the district for, you know, pole vault and long jump. So it's like they didn't stop their life when they moved from me here. However, my grandbaby took my perfume when I went down there in October and wouldn't give it back. And I said, why can't I have my perfume? She said, the sweetest thing. She said, because I have to keep it. It's nanny, my nanny in a bottle.
Yeah. You know, the whole thing comes down to, again, the leadership we're around, and we just already mentioned Frank Elliott, an incredible man. But the other thing, too, is your teamwork and your buddy support, and that's another thing in here. And as you're, you know, on our team and everything, our whole team stays together. We've been together now, as you found out, for over 30 years.
I would love
you know, to have... and we still stay in contact together. Uh-huh. And so it was like when they had a problem, they said, well, where the heck is his group again? Call him on up. Where's Rocky and Bullwinkle, you know?
They're hanging around somewhere. Just give them a call.
Yeah, well, you know, we're always there and always ready to go. But, again, that support. And, you know, and Rollo made a comment the other day. I think I shared it with you. Mm-hmm. We're sharing it with some other individuals I know in the military, under, you know, coming back in the whole thing again.
Right.
June and Memorial Day and all this stuff all triggers all of these things for us.
Absolutely.
And Rollo came up and said, well, remember this mission we did in the middle of the night for the general? And I go, yeah, well, it didn't happen. It didn't occur. He said, yeah, well, the general was really happy because we got exactly what he needed and how he needed it done when he needed it done.
You know, that's what it goes back to, trust.
Yeah.
Back to loyalty.
And
you have
again,
to have that. I've got a pretty good, but the problem I'm having is that I want to live in Louisiana and be near the kids in New Orleans, but I want to be here. So how do you do that?
Well, you know, you came back. Again, that's one thing. As you get older, you come back to your roots and your foundation. You were born and raised here.
And the thing is, the reason I came back was because I got on the Internet when my daughter had broke up with a previous bad relationship. And I said, well, you know what? I'm going to find a guy that's going to be really good for her. So I did go on and in the Internet. And, of course, he was in the Air Force. And when he saw Miss Air Force on there, he clicked in. And I said, don't get excited, I'm an old lady.
Wait a minute, you're doing matchmaking for your daughter.
Yes, and so she met him. She said, Mom, who's this good-looking Air Force guy on your Internet? And the rest is history. So then she came up here in Rantoul from my little village. They met. They moved up here 8 months before the Hurricane Katrina hit. That's when I wrote my book, Mardi Gras Eyes, because I put all their names in the book. I couldn't deal with them not being there. I passed out twice a day. I was devastated for that time that she was gone. And when the hurricane hit and took my house, we couldn't repair it because the insurance that we had and the money that they were trying to get for material tripled. You know, they were like double dipping everybody. So we didn't have any reserve. So we had no choice but to leave there. Where else would I go but my little home village? So it got me back here. Now, when we arrived in New Orleans, I kept saying, I'm not a rebel. I'm a Yankee. I don't want to be here. And I protested for 45 years of being in Louisiana. I mean, that's not where I was from. That wasn't my roots. This is my roots. When I look at the streets and I come down here, I see all of where I walked and where I was a child, my happy days. But the funniest thing is, you know that movie, It's a Wonderful Life?
Mm-hmm.
When we arrived here and I was driving here because I was coming up here to be with my kids and my daughter, when we hit the Rantoul sign, it was like I was in that movie. Here I am. I haven't been back here since I was 10. You know, I said, there's my school. I walked there. There's the church I used to hang out at. There's the orphanage I used to hang out. You know, it's like all my roots were here.
Yeah, I played Uncle Billy in A Wonderful Life with the Rantoul Theater Group. It was incredible experience. I mean, we did that. I also was in a radio production, live radio production.
Oh, wonderful.
So we had a lot of fun.
On the newspaper, I don't know, this last time I was in the newspaper, they put me kind of like in the middle of the theater announcements, the Rantoul Theater, mm-hmm. and they were written around my picture. And everyone said, are you involved in theater? I said, no, but maybe I'll go over there.
Well, you know, they're having auditions right now for Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, geez, I don't know what I would do with Romeo and Juliet. Romeo, how out thou? I don't know. I probably played a snake. I don't know.
You know, I mean, all that stuff gets fun. I mean, when we look at this stuff, and I want to look at these intersections, okay,
mm-hmm.
between PTS and everything, threats to physical health or injury,
mm-hmm.
physical strains, bacteria, viruses, toxins, genetic diseases, and aging process, threats to mental health, and again, affecting PTSD or developmental problems, genetic disorders,
mm-hmm.
diseases of the brain, aging process, all of the toxins, extreme grief, extreme or prolonged stress. So the intersection between the physiological health
mm-hmm.
and the psychological health, I mean, they're totally intertwined. And what I've learned and come to understand
mm-hmm.
is you can't separate the two.
You know as well as I do that if I get to the point to where I get a little stressed, I talk too fast. And that is part of the condition I have.
Yeah, everybody has a different response, don't they?
Well, I also worked at that answering service from 11 at night to 7 in the morning in New Orleans. And when you've got 8 doctors, hospitals calling you, and they all emergencies, and you can't put anybody on hold, you learn to type and talk awful fast. That was an occupational hazard. On top of the fact that I don't know what happened, but all of a sudden, after I worked those jobs, my speech improved.
Well, let's look at this stuff, because one of the things, and again, sometimes in my experience in working with people and talking about this stuff, and again,
mm-hmm.
the discussion we're having tonight, this physiological domain
mm-hmm.
where you have the toxins and the exposures and the injuries,
mm-hmm.
this affects how you respond and what your health is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that can actually affect your psychological domain, not that you have any mental illness or not, but the brain is literally not functioning right, or the pain levels are interfering with the functioning. It's sort of like, I mean, as we already talked, we talked about this, and I think everybody is going through this.
Mm-hmm.
This is an incredibly strange spring in early summer. We were down in the 30s the other night.
And I know.
Now, and we've got rain, and now it's cool again, and
we do
it's been raining off and on.
So
the barometric pressure is going up and down. And I can tell you with spinal injuries and fibromyalgia and the neuromuscular injuries from my combat exposure and combat injuries,
mm-hmm.
that the pain level just got out of sight. And when the weather changes,
plus
you have an event that's happening, and for me, as you and I just talked, and it's everything else. Hey, the last week of May and the first week of June, I mean, this is where, you know, like I'm on my last mission, you know, back 40-odd years ago in 1971, around exactly this right now when we are, and I'm going, okay, well, are we going to get shot out of the sky, or are we going to come back alive?
Yeah, what's going to happen next?
And then I've got to get home. And I know when I came back from Vietnam for the second time in June of 1971,
mm-hmm.
you know, we took off at Utapau, and then we landed at Kadena and Okinawa. And from there, we went to Hawaii and landed at Hickam. And so, I mean, I got to Hickam, and I said, well, I'm going to call my cousin up. So, I'm there. I got on the payphone, I called my cousin that lived there in Hickam, and it was just like, well, hi, you know, what are you doing? Don't worry a bit, you know, like, hadn't anything. And then I finally got back to O'Hare and landed O'Hare in Chicago. And my sister at that time was very little, okay?
Uh-huh.
And my parents were all gone to our best friend, their best friends, who was the parents of my best friends, and our grandparents were best friends.
Cool.
25th wedding anniversary. So everybody I knew was at the local VFW having a, you know, drunken brawl for a wedding anniversary, and I finally got my parents to come and pick me up, and they took me back to this drunken brawl at the VFW. And I'd been out of combat maybe 36 hours.
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, so, I mean, it was just so weird.
Yes, it was.
And I think, and the same thing with Desert Storm, where we got done with everything, and I had to go to General Pagonis and say, well, I got the friendly fire vehicles, they're all loaded, and I've taken the roadways away from the 82nd Airborne, that general's mad and blew blazes at me. And Gus Pagonis, you know, looked over to his sergeant, his aide right there, and said, well, take him to the airport. And they went and threw me on an airplane at Bahrain, and then I flew on back from Bahrain up to England, and from England back to Atlanta, and Atlanta back home and got off at O'Hare.
Okay, that just gave me PTSD, okay? No, that's lying.
Yeah, I mean, it was so strange. But again, it's all of this stuff is just, you know, bouncing back and forth.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, today we were getting ready, and we had to put our big flagpole out. Tomorrow we're going to have a Veterans Fly Day. We've got a steerman here at Chinook Air Force Base, and tomorrow we've got 10 veterans have been selected to go up in this World War II steerman starting at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Really?
And we built a flagpole, and we just put it out there behind the museum there by the pavilion a little while ago so that they can have a regular flag waving, you know, flag raising and waving.
Do you actually live in Rantoul?
Huh?
Do you actually live in Rantoul?
Me? Yeah, just out west of town.
Oh, I live in Rantoul, too.
Yeah.
I live not too far from the museum.
Yeah, probably if I look out across the field, I can probably see your house.
Well, I'm like right across the street from Dairy Queen. Isn't that lovely? One place I don't need to be.
Yeah, the Dairy Queen. Yeah, I was over there earlier today. I mean, never mind.
Well, if you would have gone across the street and turned
I went over to the IGA and out of County Market. Yeah, no, the hardware store and stuff.
Oh, really? I probably bumped into you so many times, bumped into you and not even known, huh?
Yeah. So, I mean, let's look at all these reactions we can have with traumatic experience and PTSD, okay?
Okay, go right ahead.
Memory problems. You know, I mean, that's severe. Sometimes I can't remember a name. You know, I might remember, you know, what happened the other day, but I can't remember what I had for breakfast.
I don't think that I quite have that yet, but what I have is when I get it, I get a little bit nervous. I did have it the other night when I stayed at a friend's house to watch the children. Things just disconnected in my brain.
Well, that's the anxiety and the panic disorders.
Yeah, because I was already in a state of being stressful, and I wasn't sure that I wanted to go to watch the kids and be responsible for them. And they ate cookies that I normally would have caught, and a whole box of cereal, which I would have caught, and because usually I'm on top of everything. But my girlfriend said, well, when you left, we almost didn't go because you started getting tears in your eyes as soon as you got there. Well, I didn't realize that I was already getting emotional, you know. But I had just come from being in my room and having a lot of issues that having trying to deal with things, you know. And with the PTSD, you know, panic thing, and I didn't want to let her down, but yet I went. And the next night I said, I can't watch them tonight because I just didn't feel like myself. But usually when I get stressed, I'll go write my books.
So this is your good, you know, the depressed mood, guilt and hopelessness and feelings of unreality is like, am I here or does this exist? I mean, then I got to go find something to do. So that's, I'll go find
the I haven't been out the house in weeks. Maybe if I go out, I'll feel better. But you see, when I get like this, I have what they call agoraphobia. I can't leave the house. My heart races 180 beats a minute, and I can't breathe. I can't drive. I can't get in a car. That happened for 4 years of my life. I would look out the window of the hospital and say, look at those people out there in the car. I wonder if I can ever do that again. And I was always a street rat. So it was like, that was terrifying to me.
So the military, I mean, what you're describing is exactly what the military has. And again, what I'm trying to do here today, and this is the reason I invited Phyllis on after we started talking, is understand the intersection. This is not unique to any military combat veteran.
This is
the same thing for police and fire and medical personnel and, you know, super authors. I mean, look at what they're thinking. You know, one of the things, too, and I mean, I can't emphasize enough, and I've seen this all the way from Vietnam all the way to the present. We see it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had to do the rescue as a substance abuse.
No, I haven't had that, thank God.
Yeah, well, I haven't either. But there's so many people
that
do abuse alcohol, and they do abuse, you know,
medicating
drugs, and they do abuse prescribed medications and drugs.
Nope.
And then they got the foods and everything else that they abuse. So it creates a real problem, a significant problem. One of the things that I've seen, and I've seen this happen way too often, and again, I don't know how the answer is, something you have to figure out and work together with others to help you, is too many people who rely on alcohol and street drugs. And that just creates all the physiological problems that interfere with the psychological domain.
Makes it worse.
Yeah, and I can understand why the escape mode comes in there. I mean, when you talk to the professionals and everybody else, and you and I are just, we're not pros, we're just kind of, you know, kind of guys that lived through the whole thing. But when
they
talk about
it,
the substance abuse comes about because they want to escape from the domain of the present time and what's happening, and they're going to feel good. So for that current time, while they're drinking the booze or they're doing the drugs, hey, they'll feel great. But then afterwards, it all goes nuts.
And then you have to do it all over again, and then you hate yourself, and then you, you know, I've never been a drinker or a smoker. I'm not even on prescription drugs, and I'm 63 years old. I consider myself fortunate with that. I should be on pain meds, but I refuse to take them. I have too much wrong with my stomach to be doing any of that, you know. And so I know a lot of people who are going through that, you know, going through all of that, actually, but they're not in my immediate friends. You know, they're just people that I know of. But they hate it. They hate themselves when they do it. They don't want to have to rely on the alcohol. There's times when I wish I could take something to make me forget everything and just go to sleep. I've even teased and said, somebody knock me out, you know, give me something in my IV, come on, where's the Demerol, you know, anything, but because I'm so exhausted, I don't get any sleep, and that's why my books are all fantasy books and out there, because that's where I am when I write them, you know, trying to escape far away.
You know, and again, we have to get involved, so I mean, again, we got to, you know, adjust our breathing and everything, our muscle relaxation, how do we relax?
Oh.
I mean, I got to start warming up and get my canoe and kayak out and go swimming over here at the pool.
Look, I've got a Total Fit gym and a gazelle and a bicycle, and it's sitting in the garage saying, hello, when are you going to use me?
Yeah.
And I'm going to use you when my body stops hurting.
Imagery.
That's got to be never.
You got hypnosis. One time I came back from Vietnam and I went to Western Illinois right afterwards.
Did that.
They had a hypnotist there.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy put me under hypnosis, and he took me back, and I said, well, let's go back, you know, 6 or 8 months from where we were. Well, he took me back into the middle of a nightmare, and then all of a sudden, well, we got to get out of this one. I didn't know we were going there.
I don't want to go back. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and then, you know, the whole thing on meditation, I mean, I found out that it's incredible. I was very lucky in my career.
I've had times
to work with both a Cherokee shaman and also an Aboriginal shaman.
Mm-hmm.
One from Carolinas, obviously, with the Cherokee Nation, and then the other one is in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And the meditation and all this stuff was just absolutely an incredible, incredible thing.
Yeah.
The other thing, too,
I could handle.
Pardon?
Meditation I would like. You know, I could handle that.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is rational thinking, getting your information, putting it all together.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that hits me, and it hits everything else, and I've had to struggle with this, and another friend I was with earlier today when we were putting the flagpole together, you know, pounding it into the ground, putting it up, is your thinking, in other words, understanding what is happening in the world, what really happened, not based on the myth and the lies and the incomplete history, but full, total knowledge, as much as you can get to your rational thinking comes together. You know, it comes together, and then the same thing, time or an organizational management. When I was starting graduate school at the University of Illinois, oh, my God, that's a long time ago. It's 30 years ago. I mean, it's the same thing, and I kind of, it was over 30 years ago. I quit drinking at that time because I realized, well, I got to go get ready to go drinking, then I got to go drinking, then I got to come back, I got to recover from drinking, then I got to do what I had to do before I was going to go drinking. And why do I want to pay to pee?
Well, that's funny. But that's the way I am. It is torture to have Dairy Queen right across my street because if I get stressed, the first thing I say, even if I haven't eaten all day, I'll say to my husband, Ronnie, go get me a Dairy Queen. He'll say, remember, you don't want to eat them. And I'll say, well, I'll not want to eat them tomorrow.
Well, when I was growing up, my mom had a Baskin Robbins. Yeah,
well, I lost 100 pounds since I moved here, so I'm losing it. It's just, oh, it's so hard. And when you get older, it's even harder. And then when your body hurts and your knees hurt and you can't go out walking, everyone says, go take a walk. Yeah, right, I'll take a walk. I'll take 5 steps, and then you have to pick me off the ground.
You know, it comes back to, and I had Dr. Edward George Perkins, who is he's gone now up to heaven, but he was an incredible professor at the University of Illinois in the Department of Food Science, and he was my mentor. And we were doing all kinds of stuff. And he said, well, let's do 20, try 20 things. You might mess up 5, but you're going to succeed in 15. And he's so right because, again, it's lifestyle management and get involved in doing things because if you really want to recover and have a good day, now I'm going to have horrible days. Some horrible days, I mean, like, yesterday, no matter what I do, I couldn't warm up. The weather was cold. It was raining and everything. The pain was running out of cycle because barometric pressure was going up and down. And, you know, I ran out of my meds. Thank God the post office got them to me. They saved them there so I could come and get them because otherwise a three-day weekend, I wouldn't have got them.
Oh, I hate that when that happens.
Yeah, and so this whole thing is your lifestyle management got to come into play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm looking at all this whole thing, and I'm trying to think, and again, the idea was to discuss this tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And what is PTSD? How does it affect the fact that it's not just in the military, it's in the families.
Yes, and it can be inherited.
Civilians.
Yes, it can be inherited. Even people that are inherited in family, going through therapy, I learned this, that it can be from a family issue. And I will say this, after being here in Rantoul, I have met my mother's family that she was grew up with, her brothers and sisters. I see similarities with them. You know, I hear it. It's like, now I know why my mother did this or said that, because it's all in the family. It's in the genes. And, you know, thank God I've never had migraine headaches, but my sister and my daughter do. And it just tears me up, just the thought of what they go through. And it's just a symptom, but my mother had it too. So you see, it's all in the genes.
Yeah. Denise, are you by there by any chance? Okay, I haven't been able to find her. I hope she's
safe.
Denise,
you lost. Come back to us.
You know, one of the other things, too, when I'm looking
I wondered where she was.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't been able to get in touch with her. One thing, and again, because I was in the Department of Food Science at the University of Illinois for many years, and nutrition is essential and proper diet. I mean, I cannot emphasize enough on an extremely well-balanced diet of all the things, and you don't have to go hog wild on one thing or hog wild on another, but just an extraordinarily balanced diet across all the major food groups. And you can get that information from any of your local university here. Obviously, University of Illinois Cooperative Extension Service has all that stuff.
But I went to the Rader Institute. I was in there for 2 months for the eating disorder clinic in New Orleans. So I went through a lot of classes like that. I took it in college. Plus, I took psychology in college. And after I left college, I called up my psychologist that I saw in the Ochsner Stress Treatment Unit in Jefferson, Louisiana. And I went and called the psychologist. I said, I have an A, and I was exempt from the finals in this. He goes, all the therapy you had, did you think you would have anything but that? He said, I'd be ashamed if you didn't. But the nutritional part, yes. I have a very, very wonderful husband, and he, I don't cook. I write books, and he comes in and brings me my chicken and baked potato or whatever and my vegetables, and he keeps me grounded with that. But he says, you forgot to eat, and I just forget because when I'm in that zone of writing these books, but I have 8 books started, and right in the middle of 8 of these books, and even children's books, and I just can't seem to get those done. But now maybe after this one is done, this 4-part series. But nutrition is very important. I eat chicken. I eat a lot of protein. I eat a small baked potato because that can be, you know, even though it's got potassium in it, it's a starch. I try to stay away from peas because they're starchy, you know, and I eat green beans. But I drink just water. I very seldom drink soft drinks. Now, when I went back to Louisiana with stayed at my daughter's house, I drank nothing but Sprites because I was having a celebration.
Well, I go through so much lemonade and fruit juices and orange juice that I'm not sure.
I like Hardy's lemonade. I get that every now and then. But and fruit juices tear my stomach up. I can't take ibuprofen or Aleve or Motrin, I found out. One time I took two Aleve, you know, to see if I can get my knees to stop hurting. They were really hurting bad. And I got a stomach bleed and got put in the hospital because I drank it with orange juice. I took it with orange juice. And I didn't realize that, neither did they, until I was watching the TV show, and this guy needed some ibuprofen, and the girl said, okay, here. And she said, here, have some orange juice. He goes, no, you're not supposed to drink any citrus with these. You could get a stomach bleed. I went, bingo.
Yeah, you know, when you look at nutrition, and I got to emphasize enough, everybody's talked about it, you know, it's 3,000 calories equals 1 pound. So if you do 3,000 calories of work, then you have 3,000 calories of food intake in order to stay totally stable.
Yeah.
If you get to an increased level of activity and everything, and your metabolism is going to change up and down depending upon weather and all kinds of conditions,
yeah.
So how much you use and everything else, but it's still the same thing. And so you have to have it all totally balanced on out. And again, it's across all the food groups, all the domains. Make sure you talk to them. One thing I learned a long time ago, being in the food science department and working with nutrition and running the labs, mm-hmm. is your medical doctor has virtually only 1 3-hour class in nutrition.
Yeah.
And so you have to find somebody that's a pro in nutrition to help you with this.
But that's where my Richard Simmons comes in of 40 years.
Yeah, you guys are friends, aren't you?
Yes, all I have to do is just send him an email at 4 o'clock in the morning and say, I miss you, I'm so aggravated over here, and he'll send me back and say, oh, my Phyllis, you inspire me, I'm writing a book.
Yeah, I got off an airplane once in Birmingham, Alabama with Richard Simmons, and that flying with him was an experience. I didn't meet him or didn't get to talk to him, but I was on the same airplane, and, you know, when we got off at the Birmingham International Airport, it was like, What is going on here?
I met him before he was really famous, and he's just the most wonderful man. His family, all of his family, are very wonderful. All his friends with his parents. And there's a picture of him and me on my website. And he also, in my book, this last book, I added a lot of his emails about my books. Hi, I got your book, and I'm taking it to Paris, and I love it, and, you know, you're so talented, and I miss and love you. And, you know, so I just wanted to share that with all everybody, you know. And on my Phyllis Morris writer page on Facebook, I've got some of his emails there, too. And it's funny because this one girl said, wait a minute, I've been writing him for 30 years, and he never answers me. And my girlfriend put in there, all of a sudden, the little voice came up and said on there, it's an inside thing, honey.
You know, so again, we're looking at the whole thing as nutrition, mental attitude, get involved in things.
Oh, we got to go already.
Physical
okay.
activity. It's sort of like I'm to the point now where, I mean, I used to be able to leap 4-story buildings. I'm down to a single story if I'm lucky. I mean, you know, it's a joke.
You crack me up. I can't believe our hour is over.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Well,
yeah.
Phyllis, thank you very much. We need to continue on this stuff. I know where Denise is. We're missing her and some of the rest of the guys I've invited on tonight.
Uh-huh.
But I'd like to thank everything again, ladies and gentlemen. Let's remember what Memorial Day is about. It's actually Decoration Day. It came about after Civil War to honor all those that died during the Civil War. And it became to honor all those that had died in the service of our nation. So that's what it's really about. It's not a barbecue. It's not a sale, and that's what it's about. Well, hey, again, Progressive Radio, we're moving forward, educating, informing, and giving people opportunities. Phyllis, thank you very much.
Good night. You're welcome, and I'll talk to you again.
Okay, take care. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. God bless America.
Bless everybody. Bye.